Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome to Greenwashed. You're with Jaspreet and Don, and it is our pleasure today to welcome back a former guest nearly a year on from the time when we had her, Margaret Byfield from the American Stewards for Liberty. And Margaret, there's one thing if I must tell you, it is that we use that line that you spoke about in your last interview to Don and me that your father mentioned that if you don't own property, you are property. So our listeners will resonate with that because we've used that time and time again. But to just give a brief background on you and your organization for those who might be listening to you for the first time here, Margaret's family was among the first Western landowners targeted by the radical environmental agenda, resulting in a 27-year epic legal battle, Hage versus United States. You formed Stewards of the Range in Idaho in around the early 90s, which has now today gone on to become the American Stewards of Liberty. The focus of your organization has been educating citizens and policymakers nationwide how to help their communities defend land rights at the local level. And that is something Dawn and I couldn't agree with more. So our pleasure to have you back on. Welcome, Margaret.
Oh, well, thank you. It is so good to visit with you guys again. It's we have a lot of things in common, even though we might be in different countries, because property rights is a human right. So I'm always pleased to visit with you.
Absolutely. And as your father's words, you know, if you don't own property, you are property. But what we've been seeing is the slow devolution, dissolution. I don't know what they're doing. They're really diluting our property rights by conservation easements and so on and so forth. But then if an average person who doesn't understand the agenda, how it is playing out, it seems that it's good. And, you know, no one would be against the idea of conserving biodiversity. We all want to do that. We all want to see what is the best of our countries preserved. But that's not quite how this agenda works, does it?
No, and that's a really good point and a good point to start off on. I think the first thing you really have to understand about the green movement is it's not about conservation. It's about control. It's just the green movement plays on people's emotions, not on facts, and kind of gets people to buy into this idea that they're, you know, we're doing terrible things to our resources, which, you know, I'm sure there are places where things have been done that it's not the way we would want to do it, but they're more anomalies. They're not the norm. And but those are what they pounce on in order to convince people that, oh, we must have consolidated control of our natural resources so that bad things can't happen. And of course, what you get from consolidated control is a lot of really bad things that happen and very little control that the people have anymore. And so the key thing about that, like the 30 by 30 agenda that we talked about, I think last time, is it's really a ruse to get control of private property, control of the natural resources into these consolidated forms where governments and environmental groups really control what's done on the land. And that takes the power away from the people. And it removes us so that we no longer have can make individual choices over our own livelihoods. So that is what the conservation movement is about. And, you know, my dad said this again. I'll give you another one of Dad's great phrases, which I use a lot of his still today, is when we're in the middle of our legal battle, he said that one of the things he had to understand is that the environmental movement was not about whether we would use the resources. It was about who would use the resources. And that really describes the 30 by 30 agenda and then the natural asset scam that we've been fighting in America pretty aggressively.
Now, we recently had a guest last week, actually, from Rainforest Reserves Australia, Caroline Ames, who came on. And she spoke very passionately. She'd been into conservation for most of her life, good 30, 40 years. And her organization, which is completely 100% volunteer-led, has donated millions to some of Australia's foremost environmental charities. And now she feels so betrayed that those environmental groups are no longer opposing the koala habitat amongst a lot of other biodiversity hotspots that are being taken over by international renewable energy giants and completely turning these pristine landscapes that should have been held in perpetuity as they are into, you know, industrial ecosystems. And that's why, I mean, we listened to Adon and I, and you could hear that the betrayal was so obvious. This is someone who believed in it, who invested her life into this, and yet at the end was left with nothing. And she says, where are those groups now raising the voice when, you know, the range after mountain range has been converted into this? And the 30 by 30 agenda, which is which Biden, not long after coming to power, pushed with an executive order that 30% of America is going to go under conservation. For me, a similar one here is this program we call Recloaking Papatanuku, which actually means recloaking Mother Earth. And our government last year said that, was it the year prior, that 2.1 million hectares of land further in New Zealand is to go under conservation. That accounts for about 20% more land than what is already in. So it's funny, you know, you're in one continent, you're in North America, we are out here in Oceania, and yet the agendas remain the same.
They do. It's an international agenda. And that's really interesting to hear that from your guest, because she really points out the fundamental problem with that agenda is they are becoming not only the owners and controllers of these green, you know, preserved areas, but they're also becoming the policemen for them. So in other words, they enforce, the same people who own and control these areas also enforce that they remain conserved. Well, when they have both sets of powers, they get to decide who gets to use it and for what purpose. And so it's very easy to say, well, green energy is okay to develop in these conserved areas because, of course, it's sustainable. You know, it meets all, it checks off their floating definition. Yeah, of floating definition of their version of conservation at the day, at the time or the year. So, but that's, you know, that's one of the things that I think we've had this discussion before. One of the things that makes America so unique is the division of power. So our Constitution is set up so that power is diffused through three branches of government. And the founders did that deliberately because they didn't want to see that the same branch of government could also, that made the law, could then enforce the law and then could therefore take the power away from the people. But that's really what you're seeing worldwide. And I think your guest really pinpointed what they have set up to do worldwide through the green agenda. And just a lot of people don't understand that. It really, the issue is not at all about resource use as far as, are we in a nature crisis? That's not what the issue is about. The issue is who's going to own the assets? Who's going to be able to control that? Because that's ultimately what they're after, is control of those assets. It's about assets to them. It's not about conserving the environment.
No.
So moving on from that point then, what is a natural asset company and how could it be monetized if the rules of the country don't allow that to be? So, I mean, there's a push in your country to have it monetized through the New York Stock Exchange. The Securities Exchange Commission tried to pull a fast one on you all, and luckily that was rebuffed for the moment. What is a definition of a natural asset company, though, Margaret, just to try and simplify it?
Okay, well, let me start with first by just explaining what they are calling natural assets or ecosystem services or environmental services, because then from that point, then they have tried to mechanize it through different things like a natural asset company, or the new one in America that we're fighting is a natural capital accounts. But the key thing to understand about what they're doing is what they're trying to do is create a whole new asset that has never been considered property before. So things like pollination, photosynthesis, you know, health benefits from being in open air, they're actually trying to make these real assets that have a monetary value. And, you know, they don't fit the definition of private property. The best way to understand, I think the simplest way to understand private property is it's something you can contain and exclude others from. And that makes sense, land, water, even intellectual property. You know, you write a book. That is your property. You get to decide who gets to read it, by who buys it. It's that make sense, right? So property can be best understood in those two very simple parameters as something you can contain and exclude others from. Well, things like pollination, how do you exclude people from utilizing pollination? How do you say, oh, you didn't pay for your pollination today, so you don't get any today? You cannot do that. And so that's why these things have never been considered property before. But what they're trying to do is say these are property rights that, because we have not properly considered them and monetized them, then they are not being properly accounted for in the monetary system. And if we did that, we would take better care of the earth. That's kind of a simplification of what they try to sell to the people on why they need to monetize these things. But that's the key thing that they're trying to do. When you hear about natural assets, when you hear about environmental service, ecosystem credits, biodiversity credits, that's what they're talking about doing, is monetizing things that should not be property. Now, one of the key things that this allows them to do is, if it's something that really shouldn't be property, then they have to come up with a way to value it. Because this isn't something that you go to the grocery store and say, hey, yeah, I want to throw in some carbon credits, or, you know, I'll buy a few of these here, right? This is not a consumer-based value where consumers decide the value of these things. This is something that literally bureaucrats decide behind closed doors. What is the value of these assets? So we probably, you know, talked about this last time, but the simplest way that I can explain it is a bureaucrat in the room saying that the air you breathe in New Zealand is worth X and the air I breathe in America is worth Y. And that value is going to change depending on who is holding office, who is holding political power. So the other thing that that does is it creates huge market distortions in the economy. Okay, because now you don't have the stability of a consumer market that is really based on supply and demand. Now you have this whole manufactured value infused into our marketplace that can be manipulated through social agendas and people in political power. So it makes everything unstable. So those are, you know, really two key arguments why this natural asset company, or this natural asset scam, as we call it, is extremely dangerous worldwide. And they are doing this worldwide. It's not just happening in America.
No.
Yeah, so that's kind of a background on natural assets. Right. And we can talk about the forms that they're using to implement that.
Right. Well, so one thing that concerns me is, because we have these reporting standards for ecosystem services, or way back in the 90s, I became aware of a concept called triple bottom line accounting. And then there was the discussion that we have to have all externalities taken into reporting on environmental output. And now we see that a Rockefeller-based company, or Rockefeller Foundation company, the Intrinsic Exchange Group, is trying to develop this new corporate taxonomy and reporting system. I assume that's what they mean. How can we ever decide what is responsible reporting systems, when in the old days we just want a set of accounts that says this is what this company's doing, it's got a profit and loss account, and that's it. What's good about this next phase?
Yeah, so you actually then, I mean, you were clued into what they were doing very, very early on, because the first thing they had to do was really quantify these environmental services. So that's what you were watching. And I think what you saw is what happened in the marketplace, where these things have always been considered externalities. So in other words, you buy a piece of property, that value is determined by the quality of that property, including, is the water clean or dirty? You know, are there any other environmental problems? And that just goes into the base value of the property. It's not a separate value in and of itself. And that's what they're doing here, is they're changing it from being an externality that always has been taken into account, and it always has been used to help value property. But now they're trying to make that a separate asset that can be controlled by somebody and owned by somebody else. So the first step, of course, is you have to quantify it. So we have seen that in America, where they are collecting so much data from landowners in areas that we've never had to report before. Well, they're getting data so they can quantify it. Then the next step is monetizing it. And that's what we really faced last October when the IEG, Intrinsic Exchange Group, backed by the Rockefeller Foundation, partnered with the New York Stock Exchange to create the natural asset companies, which then what it did was create a private investment vehicle that would own these environmental services that people could invest in. And that was the step that they needed to take to actually monetize these natural processes. And that was the key step that we had to stop.
Talk about Ponzi schemes, isn't it? You know, just creating money out of thin air. These guys are experts, and there is people on the land who actually do hard work, backbreaking labor. They are somehow left struggling for it. But I am seeing what you talk about, the monetization and data collection. The White House report, when they said it's been an successful inaugural first year for natural capital accounting, they put forth this pilot project report out. And I was looking at this report, and it says, and this is what shook me, it says private land in the contiguous 48 states in the U.S. was valued at $32 trillion, equivalent to nearly 30% of the net wealth already measured in the U.S. accounts. Accounting for natural assets like land on the nation's balance sheet is critical because omitting them would dramatically understate U.S. wealth. So they are, the way I read this, they are taking everyone's land, putting a value onto it, putting it on the country's balance sheet. Where is the private property in this?
Oh, I know it. And I will tell you, this has been one of the most frightening steps that they have taken. So that's the point that I've been trying to get across to the members, in our congressional leadership, is that this is a huge step that they are taking. They are actually trying to put private property, privately held by Americans, on the federal balance sheet as an asset owned by the federal government. We think primarily to be used as collateral for our national debt, which means if it's collateral, somebody else can take it, right? If we default. That's what collateral is there for. And so that is very frightening. And the reason it's different in America and such a bold step for them is because, America is not owned by a king. So in our nation, we don't have a king that's sovereign. We don't have a government that's sovereign. That's what's so unique about America, is the individual is sovereign. And so this is something that I think would be a little easier to do in Australia because, you have entities that are sovereign over the individual, where in America, it's the opposite. And so that's why we have a representative government. We give up a little bit of our sovereignty to our elected officials to run our government, but that's why it's flipped. And so it is for them to make this very, very bold move in America and take private property and put it on the federal balance sheet under this new line item that they're creating called natural capital accounts is extremely bold. And I don't think enough people in America really understand yet what they're trying to do. So one of the books that I just finished was reading Margaret Thatcher's autobiography. And, she came into power after a lot of socialist programs had been put in place. And so I'd kind of forgotten that, she had to do things like privatize Rolls-Royce and British Airways, because they had moved, it began with price controls, and then it was subsidies into the industries in order to keep them afloat, and they couldn't let British Steel fail. Therefore, the government had to pour more into it. And by the end of the day, they pretty much owned all these industries. So she came in and she started privatizing these, getting the government out of all of these things. But, I kind of see what the White House is trying to do under this strategy is kind of the first step in nationalizing the private land. I mean, now we've kind of moved beyond just monetizing these natural processes, which they also plan to do through the natural capital accounts and putting that on the federal balance sheet. But going after the private property, I think, is very troubling.
It is, because it would be on an individual's balance sheet somewhere. And then it is, it almost sounds like fraud, doesn't it? If the same asset is reflecting in two separate sets of balance sheets, the individuals and the state. So who owns it? Therein lies the question. But you're talking about biodiversity credits and the fact that the natural asset companies last year, when we spoke, November last year, they were defeated. But there's also the Sustains Act in the US, for which mm-hmm. the submissions have closed recently. And if I read out, it says the Sustains Act provides an opportunity for the private sector to partner with the USDA, your US Department of Agriculture, to engage farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners in supporting conservation initiatives, you know, practices to sequester carbon, wildlife habitat, and so on. Is this another attack? Because yet again, the government is coming into another way to round up the private property, the way I see, because conservation easements, as you've pointed out in the past, are not what they seem. They are a roadblock often to do what you might do with your property. And I don't mean destroying it. I just mean ability to use your property as you would wish.
Yeah, the conservation easement, once a landowner puts that on their land, it's no longer private property. And you nailed it, because control of the land now transfers to the land trust or the government under that easement contract. And if you don't have control of your land, you don't have ownership. That's one of the fundamental elements of property. So you may still be able to have to pay the taxes, and you may have a piece of paper that says you have title to the land, but functionally, that is no longer private property. You are the servient estate, which is why the legal definition that they should have been called is something called a conservation servitude, because it makes the landowner servient to the easement holder. But the environmentalists, of course, knew if they actually called it what it should have been called, nobody would sign up for these, because then it'd be pretty clear what this device was. But so what the Sustains Act does, so it does allow the private contributions to basically help stretch the federal dollar for these voluntary conservation programs that landowners put on their land to do more with that land, or conserve it, or, you know, use it sustainably, all of these, you know, climate smart programs. And so to the landowner, they're just seeing, really, this is extra money in our pocket. This is how we stay in business. You know, whatever the motivation would be, money's a pretty good motivator. But the real dangerous part of this act, and I actually think that when this act was first proposed, if the sponsors of it had really understood the natural asset scheme that was in play at the time, I don't think they would have pushed this forward, because this actually was a Republican-led bill. So our conservative government or leaders actually put this bill in place. But what it does is it allows that contributing entity, the private entity, to then prescribe to the Secretary of Agriculture the value of those environmental services that they now own because of their private contribution on private land. Okay, so that decision about the ownership of these natural processes on private land is being made between the contributing entity and the secretary, not the landowner.
Landowner.
And so this, again, this is like a kind of a sneaky way to backdoor monetize environmental services, which was the key thing we were able to shut down through the natural asset companies by getting that rule withdrawn. So this is kind of another way, but it's different, because this is actually stems from and directed from an act of Congress that has passed. So this isn't an administrative agency trying to do something without authorization. They have authorization from Congress to do this. So that's what is most concerning about this particular
sustained
act.
So many will fall into the trap once money changes hands. Now, for our listeners, yep. To translate it, we have here in New Zealand, people put their land into conservation called QE2, Queen Elizabeth II Trust, where it is held in perpetuity, which is well and good. But as Dawn and I have spoken about in the past, we have now new instruments, SNAs, Significant Natural Areas, SASMs, Sites and Areas of Significance to Maori. All of this is now being used. Dawn, doesn't it seem so familiar what you're talking about?
There's a whole lot of commonality coming into play. I can see it. It's hard to express it, though, and that's why we have people like Margaret on our show to try and alert our listeners to what's all around us, but we actually haven't nailed it in such a way that the American Stewards of Liberty have. So, you know, I despair, Margaret, that successive governments have been playing along with this until you get to the pointy end. And you've batted it off for the moment, but you know that the battle's not won because these things don't go away. What will it take? Because I would love to see them go away. What will it take to see them off for good? I mean, I see a part of one of the, I'm going to just make a statement here for a second. One of the angles I noted in one of your outputs was the push for regenerative agriculture. And we've got that push happening here too. Now, there's no rules around regenerative agriculture in New Zealand, but if they could put rules around it, all of a sudden that would be reined into this idea of perhaps asset management and asset and monetizing the asset some other way. So, yeah, what will it take to put the stoppers on this for good? Is it possible even? It seems to have got out of bed. I mean, yeah, Biden took six days to put his executive order through and get 30 by 30 going.
I always think it's possible. I mean, I have always operated with a lot of hope and, you know, even facing some of these big battles. I mean, really, when we were in the middle of the natural asset company issue on October 4th, when the SEC rule came out, I mean, I think I could count on one hand that really understood what this rule meant and what it would do to our country. But we were able to marshal the forces to understand this and put enough pressure on the New York Stock Exchange that they actually voluntarily withdrew their application. But it took 23 state financial officers and 25 attorney generals and the House Natural Resource Chairman in, you know, beginning an investigation and a whole lot of people, the public having an outcry. And, you know, this is something that we can't ignore is by educating the public, we're also educating policymakers. And the power of the people is still very, very valuable and very powerful. And so that's one reason, like, I like doing programs like yours, because that's what you're doing. You're educating them. And we have to remember this is knowledge is truth. And truth is more powerful than all the lies they can disseminate. And so the other thing to keep in mind is it really only takes 3% to change an agenda.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, you can change an entire agenda with 3% of the population. So, you know, what we have to do is we have to get the intellectual people who will really dig into these issues and have that moral compass to understand things like monetizing pollination means somebody is going to be own and control that and decide who gets to use it and who doesn't. That morally, that's wrong, and it's about educating people, I think, to the point that they understand this is what they are doing, and so we have to keep explaining this to people, and then, you know, it's also being well organized. You know, thankfully, when we fought NACS, we had a pretty good core group of people that had access to other organizations that could kind of marshal the forces. And so it really was, I think SEC and New York Stock Exchange got overpowered by the right people in high places, such as 25 state attorney generals sending them a letter, which essentially said, you do this, you're going to be sued by 25 states, right? So New York Stock Exchange doesn't want to be in that business. So it really is, you've just got to be very smart about how you fight this, but do not underestimate the educational component of this. We were able, I think, to marshal those forces because we could communicate to very wise, smart people who may have, before NACS, thought about conservation as a really good thing and 30 by 30 is okay, until they saw it play out in the natural asset, you know, sphere, and they went, whoa, 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 wait a minute. this is too far. So, you know, I think we just have to continue to communicate, continue to organize, and just fight the daily battles that come our way. You know, I mean, last year this time it was natural asset companies. Today it's Sustained Act and natural capital accounts. Yes, it's the same battle, but we won the NAC fight. I mean, they had to pull that back. That was a huge victory for the people. So the little guy, you know, you and I. That was a huge issue, you know. And I'm when that happened, I thought, boy, there were some high-priced war wounds on that one in New York City, when in Wall Street, when that happened, because they had invested a ton, billions and billions of dollars into this agenda, and we were able to say, no, no, you're not doing this in America.
Fabulous. So, and you've done this by always working at the local level. And, you know, because the country is set up like this, we only have a central government. We do have state sort of, you know, we have district councils and so on, but we don't really have the devolution of power that you have in the states. But yet because the last 3-4 years have been a watershed for many people who've gone along with a lot of stuff over decades, have suddenly been like, nah, you know, when COVID hit and a few others thing, it's a few people suddenly realized this is not stopping, and they decided to push back. And we've tried to do this similarly at a local level, because I've always thought going to the grassroots is where it is at, because those are the people who are really hurting. Those are the ones you have to understand. And this 3% figure that you said is what it takes to turn the tide. It's one I've held on to. I've heard this figure, 3-4%. I'm like, all right, that's doable. A country of 5 million, 3-4, we can do this. But it's interesting. They don't stop. I have absolutely no qualms about admitting the fact that I think there's going to be a whole heap of more biodiversity nonsense coming out of the United Nations Biodiversity Conference that's going to happen at Colombia at the end of this month. And they're going to have more stuff coming out, but it's just a matter of getting educated, as you say.
Yeah. They're operating very desperate right now. They're operating like they have to get this agenda put in place now and quickly, they're not going to be able to get it done. I know there's a lot of fear. If Trump is reelected in America, then they know a lot of this stuff is going to end. You know, and his second time in, he has a much better sense of what he needs to do in order to stop these things than he did the first time around. They know that. So that scares him. That also means that when they are operating, you know, trying to get things done ahead of schedule, they're going to make mistakes. And so we need to be aware of that and be looking for those opportunities. Those mistakes then become our opportunities. And so, you know, you cannot fight these battles with a defeatist attitude, no matter how big it looks to be. You know, I know that my husband and I fight with a lot of faith. You know, we have a very deep faith in God. We have seen him actively work in our lives. We have seen him actively work on behalf of this country. And so maybe that's where our hope comes from, because we know that we can rely on that. And, you know, even the NAC battle, I will tell you, in the middle of that, Dan and I could see the hand of God at work. I mean, the doors that were opening, people we'd never talked to before, that, you know, in high, powerful places, that we could get on the phone and explain what was happening, they'd say, okay, we're going to fight this. And I'd get off the phone thinking, they don't even know who we are. And they're taking our word for it, you know, and it's of course, you know, they do their background and they, you know, could find out that, yes, this is actually happening. But I mean, there are just so many times that we knew absolutely it was the hand of God that for whatever reason, all the problems that are facing the nation, this is just one of them that he stepped in and said, no, this one is not going to happen. And so, you know, and that's where a lot of our hope comes from. That and why we can fight, knowing the doors are going to open. The opportunities are there. Sometimes you look at the force on the other side and you say, it's way too big for us to fight. Well, it's not. It's not. Yeah. They make mistakes. And we stay focused in the information, focused in the truth. Obviously you identified what they were doing years ago, you know, when they started talking about the ecosystem services. And so already you were kind of ahead of what they were thinking. And so you know how to find that. And then you have a great audience that you can keep apprised of what is happening, to keep them in front of it. And that's how you build, you know, the forces that can overtake this.
As my mother would say, God helps those who help themselves. And you have certainly, you've not been sitting, Margaret, for the last few decades. You've certainly put up a fight, because Yeah, that's where it is at. And that's what we've always tried to do here. I think as we get more and more aware of things and putting it out to the audiences. So we're very grateful for your time.
Fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Fantastic way to perhaps end this interview, and we'll look forward to having you back, Margaret. I mean, you very much understate yourselves, really.
Yes.
Perhaps that's part of who you are. Just do your business and make sure you have an effect. And yeah, no ego. It's fantastic to have someone like you on our show. And let's hope we can, yeah, move a few people in New Zealand to wake up, because as you say, maybe I was aware and Jaspreet's been aware, but there's a lot of people aren't. We're all very busy trying to hold our lives together under the weight of overbearing governance. And this sort of interview just gives us hope. So thank you very much for coming back on our show.
Oh, my pleasure. And you two are treasures, absolute treasures. So just keep fighting, keep getting people informed on this. It's going to pay off.
Thank you so much for your time. You were listening to Margaret Byfield from the American Stewards of Liberty, who kindly joined Dawn and me this morning for the second time around. If you want to follow them, you can go to their website, americanstewards.us. You can also sign up to, I believe it's a fortnightly newsletter that comes in called Liberty Matters. Thank you so much once again, Margaret. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.